When George Gissing died in 1903, the consensus was that he would be remembered for his critical study of Dickens and not much else. Although Gissing's reputation as a novelist has been slowly growing among academics and a select group of loyal readers, he's been largely forgotten, and even his Dickens work is ignored these days. To kick off this summer's underappreciated reading series, in which we celebrate worthy writers whose work should be better known, we'll examine the life and work of George Gissing, and I'm very pleased that it brings John Halpern, Centennial Professor of English at Vanderbilt University and Gissing biographer, to my show today. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Gissing was a star pupil who tested first in the country on his Oxford entrance exams, but he had a serious fall from grace when he was just 18. What happened?
Well, he went to Manchester. It was called Owens College in those days, University of Manchester, and he got caught stealing money from the men's locker room to support an alcoholic prostitute who he wanted to buy a sewing machine for so that she could earn an honest living. But her interests were more, shall we say, outdoorsy, and it didn't work. And he was kicked out of college. All his honors and degrees were confiscated. And he did what a lot of British black sheep did in those days. He went to America, where he nearly starved to death. Spent some years there, and finally found himself sitting in a boarding house in Chicago one very cold day, with no money and no means of paying his rent, thinking, well, maybe I should write a story about English life and try to sell it to an American newspaper. If you've read New Grub Street, that's exactly the position that the character Whelpdale finds himself in that novel. So Gissing wrote some stories, managed to sell them to the Chicago Tribune, worked his way back to England, and then, of course, immediately married the young lady from Manchester, which virtually guaranteed that they would live in poverty for the next few years. I was thinking as I was listening to your previous guest that he would have loved to have eaten some of those dishes she was talking about, but he spent about 10 or 15 years starving to death.
Well, Mark Bittman, when he heard that we were talking about Gissing, got all excited because he said, I'm one of those people who just adores him. And there are these Gissing lovers, and they're always surprised when no one else seems to recognize the name. Do you think that Gissing would have gone on to have had a lot more success if he hadn't been caught stealing that money?
No, I think that his life is like an opera. The things that happened to him early in life provided virtually all the material that he wrote about later. He wrote obsessively about himself, and one of the distinguishing things about him is that he's one of the only, perhaps the only author I can think of in any language, who was able to write about being absolutely poor. And I don't mean relatively poor. I mean absolutely poor, living in the slums and not knowing where your next meal was coming from. How many people can actually write about that?
Well, Dickens did to some degree, but Gissing actually lived it.
Well, Dickens never lived it, I have to tell you that. He, in later years, he liked to pretend that he'd been poor as a child. And there was an episode where the family lost its money and he had to go to work in a blacking factory. But in fact, Dickens was never down and out in the sense of being absolutely poor. He always had a little money, and the question for Dickens was, well, shall I spend it on this or on that? There were times when Gissing had no money, and in order to eat, he had to sell his clothes.
Now, would you say that New Grub Street is his masterpiece?
I think it is, because I don't think there's another novel in any language that shows so vividly the collision between materialism and art, the necessity of the artist to live, and the temptation to give in to what people want from you versus the desire to remain true to yourself as an artist.
This is about people who have to flirt with the idea of becoming hack writers to stay alive.
Several of them do become hack writers. One of them founds a magazine very much like People magazine today, which he says is for the quarter educated. But the main character whose name is Reardon, won't compromise, and of course he goes down to defeat as a result of that. It's a very bitter commentary on the importance of not only of money, but of compromising your ideals in order to survive.
Well, the main characters, Edwin Reardon, Jasper Milvain, and maybe Alfred Yule to a lesser degree, do you think they all represent different aspects of Gissing's personality?
Absolutely. There's also, there are five writers, Whelpdale, who I've already described, and there's another writer named Biffen, who writes about the poor and can't sell anything.
Well, he's a Zolaite to a point where his realism is so realistic that it's almost extremely boring at times.
Well, it is. He sits in restaurants and he writes down people's conversations. And when people say, well, won't that be boring? His response is, yes, of course, but life is boring. Well, unfortunately, publishers weren't interested in that. But the fifth writer in the novel, Jasper Milvain, is the one who becomes a hack and is willing to compromise his ideals. And, of course, he makes money and gets the girl in the end, so to speak, and sort of says to her in a candlelight dinner on the last page, gee, I wonder what the poor are doing tonight.
What was happening in Gissing's life when he wrote New Grub Street?
Well, at the time, the odd thing is that he had Nell Harrison, the first wife I described to you, had died, and he had gone to a music hall, and he had picked up a woman named Edith, forgotten her last name, who was just as unsuitable a wife as the first one was. He had a tendency to do that. And he was writing a novel in which several of the characters had married women who had virtually ruined their lives, either because they weren't presentable or they couldn't help them politically or in terms of their business lives. And so he was actually reading the proofs of New Grub Street as he was about to get married to Edith, who was the same kind of woman that he was describing in New Grub Street. This is what I mean by the connection between his life and his work being so constant.
He was prone to choosing the wrong women, you're saying.
Yes.
Also, despite what some people might see as a feminist side, spent a lot of time with prostitutes.
He did, that's true. Gissing was a man who was highly sexed, I guess you would say, and who couldn't wait. He was very impatient, and one of the reasons that he'd married these women is that it was the easiest way for him to get what he wanted sexually. He didn't feel as if he was respectable enough to actually have a courtship with a respectable woman. And so all of his wives were inferior. Now, at the end of his life, after the second wife was incarcerated for being insane and living with Gissing, must have driven her crazy, he married the French translator of New Grub Street, a woman named Gabrielle Fleury, and lived with her for a while, married her bigamously. This is why I say it: his life is like an opera. And at the end of his life, knew a certain amount of satisfaction, although even that marriage ended in a huge explosion, and Gissing died alone.
We're talking with John Halperin, Centennial Professor of English at Vanderbilt University, about George Gissing. He's written a biography of Gissing. Now, a number of the books are available. New Grub Street is in a Penguin Classic.
Right.
There's The Odd Women, which has just been reissued by the feminist press, Virago, and we'll get into that in a moment. Before we do, can you read a bit from New Grub Street for us?
Well, I have something that I thought you'd find more interesting, if that's all right.
Sure, read whatever you wish, if it gives us some insight into George Gissing and why people might want to find some of his books and read them.
Well, this shows you how really modern he is, if you think about it. This passage was written in 1894. It's part of a novel called In the Year of Jubilee. That was Queen Victoria's Diamond Jubilee. And he describes people going to various celebrations. And here's a scene set in the tube station, the underground station at King's Cross. They descended and stood together upon the platform among hungry crowds in black fumes that poisoned the palate with sulfur. This way and that sped the demon engines, whirling lighted wagons full of people. Shrill whistles, the hiss and roar of steam, the bang, clap, bang of carriage doors, the clatter of feet on wood and stone, all echoed and reverberated from a huge cloudy vault above them. High and low on every available yard of wall, advertisements clamored to the eye. Theaters, journals, soaps, medicines, concerts, furniture, wines, prayer meetings. All the produce and refuse of civilization announced in staring letters in daubed effigies, base, paltry, grotesque. A battleground of advertisements fitly chosen amid subterranean din and reek, a symbol to the gaze of that relentless warfare which ceases not night and day in the world above. Now, that could be a description, couldn't it, of any subway station today? The syntax is slightly different. But this is 1894, and it shows you how much Gissing had of what we might call the modern sensibility, the sort of neurasthenia, the neurasthenic response to modern life that we find in so many modern novels.
And wasn't that novel also about an extramarital affair?
It was, yes. Many of his novels are, yes.
Now, is that novel in print?
In the Year of Jubilee, I believe, is no longer in print. I can tell you what, as far as I know, besides The Odd Women and New Grub Street, there's another wonderful novel called The Nether World, which is the novel that is about primarily about his years living in an absolutely rock-bottom neighborhood slum in the 1880s. It's extraordinary because he could write about it, and it shows, not, as I say, not the relatively poor, but the absolutely down and out. And that, too, is in print. The Netherworld, published in 1889.
It's interesting that George Orwell, who wrote Down and Out in Paris and London, was somebody who thought a lot about Gissing, both positively and negatively, called him too pessimistic, and when you think of how pessimistic Orwell was, you have to wonder. Go ahead.
Orwell said that all English novels are about class, and you see that in Gissing as much as you do in anybody. He was always haunted by the fact that he was born in out of the working classes. His father was a pharmacist. And that, of course, he had this guilty secret to hide, this theft and this rustication from college, the fact that he had been caught stealing. I don't think he ever quite got over that.
Now, how many novels did he write?
23 novels and 111 short stories, which, and your listeners may not know this, is more than any other Victorian novelist except Trollope. Only Trollope wrote more.
Between 1961 and 72, there was a kind of Gissing revival. 27
yes.
editions of his work were published in just 11 years.
Yes.
And why do you think that happened, and why do you think that, except for some very clever Victorian lit classes, Gissing isn't taught all that much anymore?
Well, I think students find him depressing. I've found that I teach Gissing in my undergraduate and graduate classes, but not everybody does, of course, in the field. I think students find him a downer, and many professors feel that they want their students to find literature uplifting and to encourage them to read more, and I can certainly understand that. But I also believe that the novels you teach in a course should reflect the realities of the period itself. And Gissing's novels do that, so I go on teaching him, and he still has, you know, a fairly wide readership. There are Gissing meetings all over the world every year. There's one coming up in France next year. There are centenary meetings and bicentenary meetings and so on and so forth, and you always have conferences on Gissing and sessions on Gissing at the MLA, But you're right. I mean, he's not someone that the average person goes into, you know, Barnes & Noble and says, have you got a Gissing available?
On the other hand, The Odd Women, I would have thought, would have been much more popular than it is, because isn't it one of the first novels about working women?
It's a novel that asks the question, and this is now 1893, which is quite early, What about the odd women? And by odd women, he doesn't mean those who are, you know, nutty. He means women who are odd like a glove or an odd sock, or that is to say, those who were not married, those who have no particular slot in society. What should they do? Should they try to work? Should they marry against their wills? How should they support themselves? What kind of lives should they lead? This would have been unheard of, say, 50 years ago, because a woman living by herself in the middle of the Victorian period would have immediately been suspicious to anybody else, you know. But by the 1890s, a period had come along where women could become typists and secretaries and have the odd job. And Gissing writes his novel about them. What about them? What should happen to them? What sort of lives should they lead? So it's a very interesting novel.
What do you think was Gissing's biggest flaw as an author? Orwell called his prose often disgusting. Do you see that?
Well, he's capable of writing very well, and there are other places where he doesn't.
Well, but partly greatest, because he's banging these books out?
Yeah, well, I think his greatest flaw as a writer from a contemporary point of view was his absolute refusal in most of his novels to provide a happy ending. And I don't find that an artistic failure, but it's certainly a commercial failure, and it's typical of what Reardon does in New Grub Street. The chapter in which Reardon dies is called Reardon Becomes Practical. And Gissing never became practical.
Well, did any of these books sell well? Wasn't New Grub Street something of a bestseller
yes,
in his time?
Yes, toward the end of his life, his later books sold very well. He wrote a book at a couple of years before he died in 1903 called The Private Papers of Henry Ryecroft, which was a huge bestseller. He became friendly with Conrad and Henry James and Stephen Crane and H.G. Wells and a lot of the writers, Galsworthy, a lot of the writers who were living along the southern English coast, and they all passed his books around in his the latest number of his latest book in the latest magazine and so on. So he certainly had a vogue during the last 10 years of his life, but he had suffered a great deal to reach that point.
You can read some George Gissing. The New Grub Street is available at Penguin Classics. Borrego Press has published The Odd Women, and I suspect there are other books out there from small publishers. My great thanks to John Halperin, Centennial Professor of English at Vanderbilt University, and George Gissing's biographer. Thank you so much for talking with us today on Underappreciated.
Well, thank you for having me.